our way out from under the rubble of betrayal. We can long, wish, and hope for something all day, but until we learn how to ask for what we need, we won't get out of the starting gate. The first thing we need to do is prepare the soil. Like boulders in our path, four blocking beliefs often get in our way. 1. He's going to say no. Knowing what we need and why we need it is an obvious step that is often overlooked. What would you be willing to do to get what you're asking for? Is it worth fighting for? What happens if you don't get it? The more clarity you have about what you need, the better. 2. I don't deserve to ask. Trauma-induced shame beliefs like, I'm worthless and insignificant, or I can't ask for what I need, play havoc in our value as a human being. Telling ourselves the truth by applying the 180-degree turnaround reminds us we are worthy. I'm significant, I matter, and I deserve the right to ask. There's no need to apologize for what you need. You can be firm yet kind and anticipate a response. 3. It will never work. We need to give the other person the benefit of the doubt. In many cases in which men have betrayed us, they want to fix what they've done wrong. See if they're serious about repairing the breach. Giving them a chance gives them the opportunity to repair the damage they have done. 4. I can't do this. I'm not strong enough. It takes a lot of courage to ask. Doing so makes us vulnerable. Trauma-induced shame beliefs like, I'm weak or I'm helpless, can get in the way. Maybe we're afraid of hearing no and possibly dealing with more rejection and loss. Whatever the fear, taking one step by asking for what we need helps us grow. Understandably, there are natural challenges when sexual betrayal is in the mix. Even for couples without betrayal, asking for what they need can be a daunting task. Let's take a moment and see what 5 parts of an intentional ask look like. 5 elements of an intentional ask. There are 5 basic parts of an intentional ask. These principles don't have to be used in order, but are ideas that can help you communicate what you need from start to finish. 1. Be as clear as a bell. Take some time to look at what you need and how it provides for you. Roxy needed the ability to manage her schedule so she could take care of her family and home. Taking on the responsibility of managing Dawn's driving schedule cut hours out of her day. Creating simple sentences that start with I streamlines the process for both of you. I need to sleep in a different bed right now. With the recent discovery of your affair, I need some space to sort out my feelings. It's important that we're both tested for sexually transmitted diseases. I need to be assured that I'm sexually safe and healthy. I would like to see the results of the tests. I need to get clarity on your recovery by asking a question about your sexual sobriety. For the best outcome, offer. Can I ask you a question? Then pause and wait for a yes. When is the last time you looked at porn or sexually acted out in any way? 2. Adjust the water pressure. Water pressure? What does adjusting water pressure have to do with asking for what we need? On the heels of betrayal, we're desperate and afraid. We're scanning the horizon looking for a life raft while our self-worth is underwater. We're sending up flares for help. We just want the sexual deception to stop. That said, I've seen some ways women react in the midst of the pain that can complicate getting what they need. To better understand what I'm talking about, let's take a look at 3 types of water pressure: an IV drip, a fire hose, and a leaky faucet. IV drip. Some of us use too little pressure when we ask, much like an IV drip. Yes, we're alive, but we hate asking. We feel invisible, dispensable, and used. We might struggle to speak our minds or hold space for ourselves. We might talk about a problem over and over again or expect our husbands to know what we need. Finding our voice isn't a perfect process. We can learn to strengthen our ask by practicing saying what we mean with people who are safe. Fire hose. Sometimes we use too much pressure to get the point across. We're frustrated because we haven't felt seen or heard. It might feel too risky or vulnerable to ask. Underneath it all, we're afraid. We try lengthy explanations, anger, or demands to see if they work. We apply too much pressure and wonder why others resist. When men hear angry demands coming from us, their brains shut down. Their primal brain, ugh, puts them into a self-protection mode. They don't think clearly. Simply stating the facts helps men hear us better. If we ask and they're unwilling to hear us, we can establish safety by setting boundaries. While we can't control what they choose to do, we can control how we're going to respond if their destructive behaviors don't stop. Leaky faucet. When we ask, ask, and ask again without clearly stating what we need, setting boundaries, or following through, we train our spouses to think we don't mean what we say. They may see what we say as just sharing or nagging, so they turn us off and disrespect what we've said. Learning how to ask with clarity and steady pressure creates the best opportunity to partner in conversations and work toward the results we're looking for. 3. Paint a picture. An intentional ask includes painting a picture of what your request looks like. What do you need and when will it start? How often would you like something to occur, especially in cases when STD testing or polygraphs are being considered? What will happen if there's a boundary violation? Some women find comfort in stating a clear consequence, while others prefer to lay out a range of options should the boundary be violated. Creating a flexible plan gives betrayed partners options to choose from. 4. Let's make a deal. Sometimes we want to ask our husbands for something we believe might be helpful. They may say okay, and yet not follow through. It may be a workshop, a speaker, or a therapist we'd like to see with them. Men can be encouraged to meet our needs if we can understand what's important to them as well. If your dialogue comes to a standstill, these negotiating tips may help. Ask when they would have 5 to 10 minutes to talk, then stay within that time frame. If you're still talking 20 minutes later, they won't believe you in the future. Simply ask for what you need. Let them know what it will provide. Peace of mind, safety, comfort, help in repairing trust, etc. Finish with the question, is there anything you need from me to provide what I'm asking for? Give them time to think about the last question. It's a powerful invitation. You're asking for collaboration and buy-in. You're saying, is there anything I can do to help you help me? Then be prepared. They may ask you to provide something on your end. They might say, I haven't had time to call that marriage therapist. If you could set it up on Thursday evening, we can go. Or they might say no. 5. To tell the truth. So what if you clearly ask for what you want or need and your spouse says no? Jenny had been asking Brett to check into a sex addiction inpatient treatment center for months. He'd been coming home drunk and sleeping with other women. Brett had been diagnosed with both alcohol addiction and sex addiction. Jenny set boundaries and bravely held firm. She pleaded with him to get help for her and the kids. Finally, Jenny asked, "Brett, is there anything you need from me in order for you to go into inpatient treatment?" Brett thought for a moment and said, "No, Jenny, I don't need anything from you. I'm not going. I don't want to go, and I don't want to stay married to you." Heartache. Jenny felt a pit in her stomach. Brett was being honest and telling her the truth. He didn't want to go, and even more painful, he told her he didn't want to stay married. She listened to Brett's answer. It was his choice. She had done her best to ask Brett to get help while protecting her needs of her family. Jenny grieved when she heard Brett's answer and began looking into her options. Healthy boundaries bring respect. As we saw with Roxy and Dawn, untreated sex addiction always spirals downward. Both Roxy and Dawn grew up in situations in which their boundaries had been violated. That's not always the picture. Holding on to yourself, your voice, your choice, and your ability to negotiate and ask for what you need helps you regain respect and build your strength of character. Even now, when conflicts arise in my own life, I can hear myself say, "Hold on to yourself, girl. It's all you've got." Whether we win or lose, we learn to respect ourselves. Over the years, I've watched people come through this bloody, chaotic mess because they've learned how to risk and respect another person's boundaries. We can't build intimacy without respect. We can't respect each other without honoring what is yours and what is mine. We can't fully restore a relationship until respect and trust have been reestablished. You don't have to settle for a sexual revolving door or erect walls of steel around your heart that block you from trusting again. It's possible to become more vulnerable and develop intimacy over time. Healthy boundaries are the building blocks for repairing trust. We can hold on to ourselves, regain trust, and learn how to love again. Chapter 16. Gaslighting, Deception, and Blame, Oh My! Connor stood at the kitchen sink washing dishes. As a new bride, I was bursting with playful banter in spite of the fact that Connor was up to his elbows in dish soap. Perfect timing, I thought, as I gently leaned up behind him and nibbled on his ear. Connor pulled away. What have I done? I felt stupid. My heart hurt and clenched like a fist in my chest. I struggled to figure out what went wrong. Embarrassingly, it had become a talking point in our couples therapy. "We've been married 6 months now," I said. "Why doesn't Connor want to get close to me?" "I'm burned out," he answered. Then he listed the things about me that repelled him. His list was along these lines. "He's uncomfortable when I hold his hand. He's turned off when I rub my fingers through his hair. It bugs him when I talk with my hands. He can't stand it when I talk on the phone. I guess I made a ticking noise of some kind with my mouth." I believed him. I was intent on pleasing him, so I literally practiced sitting on my hands in the therapist's office. I was willing to do anything to get closer to him. What I didn't know at that time was that he was sexually deceiving me. And in the meantime, I'm trying to remember to sit on my hands. These crazy concoctions of lies, blame, and manipulations make the issues about us so our husbands don't have to face themselves. That's what shame does. It's the dung on a human soul that keeps our husbands from sitting too close because they're afraid we might smell it. Fibber, fake, fraud. In the research I collected from 100 women, some surprising discoveries surfaced. While both situations below are gravely wrong, I asked women what was more damaging to them. The knowledge about their partner's sexual acting out behaviors, or the continued lies that were used after they found out about their partner's sexual acts of betrayal. The study showed that 35% of the women said that the knowledge of their partner's sexual behaviors was more damaging, while surprisingly, 65% of the women said it was the continued pattern of lies that was more damaging. Lying obliterates trust. In addition, 92% of the women reported that the ongoing lies caused them to question their own intuition. When a betraying spouse becomes a master of deceit, he hides his shameful secret life from his wife, family, friends, and workplace to protect his reputation. The web of lies and the elaborate storytelling cause us to question our own sanity. We're told we're crazy, overweight, and irresponsible. Deceptive tactics such as blame, lies, and gaslighting, which I'll be discussing in this chapter, are commonly used to cover sexual secrets and shame. Let's explore how we can protect ourselves by becoming keen observers of these harmful maneuvers. Denial started in a garden. One of the most unbelievable things a wife can hear is that her husband is in denial. Are you crazy? I'm bleeding out, and he's in denial? I've just been rear-ended by a semi-truck. I look behind me and realize my husband's in the driver's seat. I know I'm hurt, and I definitely know who hurt me. There's no denial about that. Pamela. How could anyone say the man who chose to betray you is in denial? Denial is a form of self-deception. It's what happens when someone is up to their eyeballs in shame. I don't want to admit what I don't want to face. I hide the truth from myself and you. The book of Genesis starts with two passionate lovers enjoying each other's company while walking naked and completely unashamed. Healthy sexuality was God's idea. Unveiled beauty, bold acceptance, and captivating allure from head to toe. Imagine that. In a flash of a moment, doused by deception, everything changed. It was then they were introduced to shame. Genesis chapter 3 verse 7. Fear, verse 8, and guilt, verse 17, for the first time. God compassionately leaned in with a celestial flashlight of sorts and asked the first question, "Where are you?" God wasn't blind. He was pursuing them in spite of their shame. Then look what happened behind the bushes. There was hiding, pushing back, finger pointing, and bodies fearfully wrapped in fig leaves, mind-boggling gyrations, all aimed at covering shame. I don't know what you're talking about. If it wasn't for you and your problem with, whatever they fill in the blank, why do you keep bringing this up? Can't you get over it? I don't need to read those books or go to that group. Sound familiar? Much of my initial time working with sex addicts involves bravely standing up to someone who is perverting the truth. Denial is in the mix before someone gets honest enough to see the naked truth about themselves. One of the primary goals of recovery is to wake them up. I'm often asked, how long does it take before someone comes out of denial? I say, it depends. It depends on what's going on in that person's world. Is someone confronting them with truth? Are they in a face-to-face recovery group with other men who are calling them out? Lying becomes more difficult when they're looking into the faces of other men who are vulnerably open and committed to their sexual sobriety. Deception poisons the soul. Honesty, humility, and surrender are the antidotes. I'm often asked by recovering spouses, How do I know my husband is telling the truth? There is a litmus test for deception. I reply, have him display the sexual acts he sees and does in front of you and in broad daylight. In all my years of practice, I haven't had one betraying spouse take me up on that one. When someone is in denial, they avoid dealing with their issues by looking past their problem rather than facing it. They use wishful thinking, justification, confusion, minimization, entitlement, and avoidance to put things off. They fear reality and evade responsibility. Denial begins to fade as a person becomes braver than their looming consequences. Carl Jung said, shame is a soul-eating emotion, and in many cases, the duplicity eats them alive. When things get dark enough and they feel enough pain, they finally get themselves into healing at any cost. Honesty becomes the core of their recovery. It becomes their choice. Liar, liar. Two types of lies. Lying happens when somebody chooses to be dishonest with you. Your husband's having an affair. He's looking at porn or involved in cyber sex. He knows what he's doing and chooses to cover it up. When confronted in a private, confidential setting, like a 12-step group or counseling office, or by a close friend or clergy person, your husband might reveal his secrets. It may not be something he would ever do in front of you or your children or openly parade around his workplace. He wants to keep his world and reputation intact. You're not aware of it. He's choosing to hide it. He's sexually deceiving you and lying about it. He's using his recovery as a cover for acting out while deceiving you. The most difficult part of getting honest with Caroline was letting her know how I used my recovery as a con. It was a whole different level of lying. I was acting out and making her think I was doing okay. My sponsor confronted me and told me I needed to start working on my integrity. I just didn't know how to stop the lies and turn this whole mess around. I thought she'd leave me if I came clean. When I finally told her, it cut her deep. Since then, I've been working on staying honest. Brett. The first type of lying involves concealment, deception at its core. The person doesn't want to share the information, so they withhold parts of the story from you. Their deadened conscience whispers. Telling them would only hurt them deeply, so it's better not to say anything at all. Brett would temporarily relieve his conscience by giving Caroline partial truths. Recently, a team of researchers used a functional MRI to show how the brain can adapt to dishonesty. Their work uncovered biological evidence showing how small acts of dishonesty can progress to greater instances of self-serving dishonesty. In the world of recovery, this is known as how one greases the slippery slope. This made sense to Brett, as he wondered why he would not only lie to hide sex acts, but also be dishonest about stopping to get a soda on the way home. As part of Brett's ongoing recovery, he got serious and began to address his pattern of lying. Chet justified what he was doing by keeping his wife on a need-to-know basis. He deceived himself into believing it was a good thing. He was protecting her from what he called his sexual indiscretions. Chet didn't want to stop what he was doing. He was hiding what he was doing and lying to her. This second step of lying involves an extra step, falsifying information. Information is created to birth a lie. A person may say, no, that didn't happen. They don't want to admit when they are caught. The story evolves when you start asking questions. They make up a reason they lost their job. They don't want to tell you they were fired for looking at porn. They blame someone else for their sexual harassment case. They explain away unknown charges on their credit card. They falsify bank statements to hide cash used to buy sexual favors. They tell you their weekly massage helps their back. They don't want you to know it includes a happy ending. Even though you might bring some evidence forward, they discount or justify what happened to protect themselves. They turn away from honesty and do what they can to cover their tracks. Lying turns lethal when it moves from blame to systematically making the sexual deception about you. It's psychological abuse. This type of lying is in a league of its own. It's called gaslighting. Gaslighting. The term gaslighting comes from a 1944 MGM movie called Gaslight. The movie featured Ingrid Bergman, Paula, a vulnerable young singer, and Charles Boyer, Gregory, a very charismatic, mysterious older man. Gregory deceived Paula by marrying her to steal the family jewels. In the movie, Paula heard footsteps in the attic. She was unaware that Gregory was up there hunting for the jewels. She noticed gas lamps in their home flickering on and off for no apparent reason. Gregory strategically spun lies, telling Paula she was fragile and not well, just imagining things. His goal was to make her believe she was going crazy. Like spiraling down a rabbit hole, Paula became more confused and began to doubt her own sanity. Gregory's plan was to put her in an insane asylum to gain full reign within their home and find the coveted jewels. Her moment of clarity came when an undercover police inspector told her that he saw the lights dim too. Scary, right? Each time I watch the movie, my skin crawls. These strategic lies erode the very essence of who we are. Experience tells us that not every form of gaslighting is premeditated or intentional. Some people do it, but when educated about gaslighting, are able to take ownership for what they've done and apologize. The proof comes when we see their behaviors change. Common phrases of gaslighters. A gaslighter often uses phrases that create distinct reactions in you. Do any of these sound familiar? You're crazy. You need help. It's always something with you. You're overreacting. Calm down. You're so forgetful lately. That's not what I said at all. You're too sensitive. Why do you have to take things so personally? I'm starting to worry. I think there's something seriously wrong with you. Their aim is to make you doubt yourself. They use power and control to protect what they're hiding. When you react with shock, confusion, fear, sadness, anger, or terror, they want you to believe your emotions are wrong, irrational, and unnatural. Gaslighting is different than blame. Blame happens when someone points a finger and assigns fault for something they've done wrong. Gaslighting happens when someone strategically twists the truth to make us believe we're crazy or something's wrong with us to cover their own deceptive behavior. You're such a drama queen. You make a big deal out of everything. Get over it. If you weren't so overweight, I wouldn't be dealing with this. When you start dealing with your issues, we'll talk. You get angry over the smallest things. Lighten up. I think you've gotten your facts wrong. You always make stuff up in your head. We stop looking at the truth of what might be going on and start believing that something is wrong with us. We take the bait. Over time, it makes us question our intuition and gut instinct. We become unhinged. We feel crazy. We feel enraged. We stop trusting our gut. We question our own memory. We're confused over what was really going on. We say, I'm sorry, for things that aren't our fault. We lose our joy, feel hopeless, and get depressed. We isolate as we pull away from the people and things we love. It's not the coveted jewelry that's being sought after. It's the sex acts. Sex addicts protect what they're choosing to do without our knowledge or consent. When they're sexually deceiving us, they're not protecting us. If someone is gaslighting you, it may look something like this. Your husband comes home 3 hours late. You made multiple calls and there was no response. What you don't know, he's having an affair. He says, I told you I had a sales presentation tonight. You've been forgetting so many things lately. Your doctor reveals you have a sexually transmitted disease. What you don't know? Your husband's been sleeping with prostitutes. He says, it's not me, baby. You must have gotten that STD from your past. We both know how you were. You discover pornography on your husband's computer. What you don't know, he's been looking at porn and forgot to delete his history. He says, I have no idea how it got there. I saw Ben, your 12-year-old son, playing video games on my computer. That kid's got some serious ADD. He must have clicked on a link. You're home all day with the kids. You need to watch them more closely. Gaslighters construct elaborate lies to explain their behavior. All day long, you plot destruction. Your tongue cuts like a sharp razor. You're an expert at telling lies. Psalm 52, verse 2. Three coconuts and a red ball. In my office, I keep a set of three coconut shells and a red ball. When someone starts talking to me about how they are feeling manipulated, I pull out the coconut shells and the little red ball as they're telling me the story. Very quickly, they're able to see how manipulations and emotional sleights of hand are happening right in front of them. The coconut shells are quickly shuffled to hide the truth. Stories change, pieces of information are cryptic or left out. Believe me, I know. It's everything you can do to keep your eye on that little red ball. The truth is, you have some evidence. You saw the red ball. I saw pornography on his phone. I found a seductive email to a woman at his office. I knew my husband was at dinner with another woman. They were texting each other afterward, even while he was in bed with me. So you get really brave and decide to bring it to your spouse. I'm going to tell them I saw the red ball and I'm not okay with it. Guess what happens? The red ball goes under the coconut and right in front of your eyes, the three coconuts begin to move. When we're spun out by confusion and begin to question our own perceptions, we become easier to manipulate and control. When well-meaning people call our truth-seeking behaviors detective work or policing, it's not helpful. In fact, it hurts. Deception causes crazy-making. What else are we to do when someone is lying to us, hiding harmful sex acts, and manipulating the truth? Three B's that blindside us. There are three common tactics gaslighters use to erode our footing and undermine our strength: blocking, blaming, and bullying. Gaslighters not only dominate by asserting abusive control, but also pick up speed when the person gaslighted is worn down and relinquishes their power to them. Here's how. Blocking. When you present the red ball, the person on the other side blocks you. They say something like, I don't want to hear that again. I have no idea what you're talking about. You should know this isn't a good time to talk. This tactic is intended to stop you in your tracks. They want you to believe you've never seen a red ball under that coconut. Blaming. As you talk about the red ball, they make it about someone else. My boss made me stay after hours. I'll call the bank. Those withdrawals must be their error. Not my deal. Everyone at work knows that woman has a shady reputation. They may challenge your memory or question your intelligence. These tactics are used to cover up what they've done. Bullying. When you bravely bring up the red ball, they mock or demean you to get you to stop. They put you down or assault your character to assert their dominance. They say something like, "Whatever. You need to have your head examined. Stop being childish and immature. You get these crazy ideas from that support group, therapist, online guru, radio program, or friend you listen to. I'm not going to play these games with you." They don't want you to focus on what they're hiding. To protect themselves, they may demean people you have in your corner. They're afraid you may get resources to unveil the sexual secrets they're covering up. At one point, you were confident there was a red ball. Blocking, blaming, bullying, and gaslighting can exhaust you and cause you to lose faith in yourself. No matter how much you believe there is a red ball, the other person is not owning it. You begin to feel crazy and slip down into a dark rabbit hole. The four D's that take us down the rabbit hole. There are four stages we go through. One, disbelief. We see the red ball and bring it to them. They don't own it. It's shocking to see them deny the truth. Two, disillusionment. Confusion sets in. The facts don't add up. We develop a case of emotional vertigo. We become dizzy and unsure of what is true. Three, dismissal. Exhaustion sets in. Amidst the craziness of it all, we grow tired of disowned truth. We cope by giving up. We do our best to ignore the red ball. Four, depression. It's hard to live in the dark. We feel trapped and don't know how to get out. Instead of saying something wrong is happening around us, we make it our fault. Depression and helplessness set in. When we begin to unpack the truth of what's happened, our heads clear. We desperately need to climb out of the dark rabbit hole. Here's how. Rearrange your reality. What would you do if your husband came home and began to rearrange all the furniture in your home? He doesn't stop there. He moves the pictures on the walls, empties the closets, and even tips over the junk drawer. How would you feel? I thought so. At some point you might say, "What are you doing?" Or, "Stop." For some, this type of eye-to-eye conflict may be met with more betrayal. DARVO, D-A-R-V-O, a term used to explain how someone places themselves in a victim position to avoid being accountable for their behaviors, combines manipulation, denial, lies, blame, projections, and gaslighting. DARVO has three basic steps. 1. Deny the behavior. 2. Attack the individual who's doing the confronting. 3. Reverse the roles of victim and offender. After Becky confronted Justin about his affair, he met with their pastor behind closed doors. Justin tearfully explained how Becky had been angry for years and often makes a mountain out of a molehill. He worried his credibility might be questioned and wanted to make sure the church got his story straight. In these instances, the truth gets twisted, and the one who's hiding something or offending flips into the victim role. Not only do we become the source of the problem, but our reputation is undermined by false accusations. Standing our ground becomes a matter of fidelity to truth and our sanity. You are entitled to your reality. 8 Steps for Taking Your Truth Back. When someone's been trying to rearrange a reality, here are 8 steps to taking your truth back. 1. Seek wise counsel. Find someone you trust to welcome your perceptions and validate you. You need someone who is committed to helping you find your voice and truth. As you feel heard, you'll begin to settle inside. Your fears will lessen. We all need help when navigating life's toughest storms. 2. Don't isolate. Spend time with people in spite of the nagging desire to go it alone. You're not crazy. Gaslighters don't want you connecting with others. Be around people who love you, make you laugh, and lift your spirit. 3. Find a safe group. There's nothing like finding a safe group of women who understand sexual betrayal and what you're going through. Keeping your feelings bottled up can turn into anxiety and depression. Talk about what's happening. 4. Stand in your story. It's healthy to value your own viewpoint. Even siblings can grow up in the same family and have very different versions of their story. Your mind, opinions, and 100% of what you think and feel are yours. These empowering one-liners can help you hold on to yourself and respectfully disagree. Interesting. That's not how I remember it. I don't remember saying it that way. We may have to agree to disagree on this one. 5. Keep private records. It can bring relief to write down things you've observed or heard. Make sure your notes are kept in a confidential place so they can't be seen by children and family members. If your memory is questioned, you can look back at your notes. This step is not about control. It's about knowing the truth, getting safe, and staying sane. 6. Say hello to your body. Gaslighting keeps you on pins and needles. Listen to your body. It can tell you what you need. Get reacquainted with your gut. Get outdoors. Breathe fresh air. Walk. Pumping blood through your body helps your mind get clarity. 7. Press into your faith. Pick up the Psalms or Proverbs. On some of my darkest days, I have found comfort in those tear-stained pages. Proverbs tells us there are 7 things God hates. Believe it or not, gaslighting made the list. There are 6 things the Lord hates. No, 7 things he detests. Haughty eyes, a lying tongue, hands that kill the innocent, a heart that plots evil, feet that race to do wrong, a false witness who pours out lies, a person who sows discord in a family. Proverbs chapter 6, verses 16 through 19. 8. Be patient with yourself. Can you remember a time when you actually trusted your judgment? When did it change? It can take weeks or months to get your footing again after a long season of deception. Once you regain trust in yourself, the effects of gaslighting will gradually fall away. Your confidence can be restored. When we relinquish our power to a gaslighter, we stay in the crazy zone. Once we learn how to get out of the rabbit hole, we stand on solid ground. We get our gut back and often become stronger. It's possible to turn crazy around. It starts with the only thing we can change, ourselves. Reclaiming trust in ourselves while staying connected to others who are safe makes us wiser and less tolerant of abuse. No matter what happens with your relationship, you can take your truth and sanity back. Working with husbands and wives through the truth-telling process is precarious at best. There needs to be a safe place to bring out the facts and have somebody else say, "I see what you see." Validation revives us. I've had a front row seat to watching how honesty can restore breaches of trust, even after gaslighting has been part of the equation. In a study I did with 100 women, I asked a clarifying question. Would you be willing to stay in your relationship and work through the difficulties of healing and recovery if your partner stopped lying? The vast majority, 88% of the women, said they would be willing to stay in the relationship if the one who sexually deceived them stopped lying. In the next chapter, we'll be looking at the importance of telling the truth through a full disclosure. It's not just a step. Truth is the critical step in a couple's recovery. Chapter 17, To Tell the Truth. It's the wild, wild west when it comes to recovery and sexual disclosures. It's painful enough to listen to the sexual betrayals your husband has kept hidden from you. But the way he shares that information with you can be more damaging if it isn't handled with care. Many couples are given poor advice or no direction at all. 20 years of deception can be divulged in 15 minutes, leaving the wife shell-shocked, confused, and loaded with unwanted shrapnel in her skin. These mishandled admissions are more common than we'd like to think. They can be incomplete, ill-timed, one-sided surprises that catch us off guard. Allison and Hannah share how their husband's sexual disclosures went awry. Aaron and I were having breakfast at our favorite pancake house when he dumped his stuff on me. Aaron's counselor told him to give me a disclosure so we could heal. Heal? I left feeling beat up, damaged. I didn't see it coming. People were all around. The waitress kept coming to the table to see if we needed anything. Yeah, I thought, maybe a straitjacket or a gun. I wanted to scream and stop what was happening, but I couldn't. Once Aaron started, I wanted to know everything. Tears streamed down my face as he read what he'd done. We haven't been back there since. Allison. Eddie handed me his full disclosure. It was 16 pages long. I saw notes about the women he'd been with, where they met, detailed sex acts and body types. I wasn't able to get those images out of my head. When Eddie continued to lie, I decided to do a polygraph. I couldn't believe it when Eddie told me he'd made up those situations because he was scared to tell me the truth. Are you kidding me? What I didn't know is one of the women he has sex with is our neighbor. Hannah. Please, for your sake, stop the madness. Here are some thoughts to help you consider the different elements of a full disclosure. What is a therapeutic full disclosure? Whether it's a one-time event or years of betrayal, sexual acts have been secretly kept from you. The relationship has no chance of restoration or intimacy without safety and truth. You and your spouse can painfully settle in to being disconnected roommates or adversaries and can even become abusive when deception is in the mix. It's not surprising that deception turns into every man or woman for themselves, far from what a healthy marriage is intended to be. A therapeutic full disclosure is by nature a complex process and is best handled with professionals who've been adequately trained in knowing how to walk couples through this process. It's an action step towards restoring the sexual breach of trust. It's an honest transfer of information with three goals in mind: awareness, coming clean, and truth, ACT. A for awareness. The wife is given information about her husband's sexual behaviors that have been hidden through lies and deceit. C, coming clean. The betraying spouse has the opportunity to get out from underneath the burden of secrets and shame. Coming clean involves bringing his wife into an understanding of the full nature of his sexual behaviors that have compromised trust. It's not a time for him to withhold deceptions he deems too painful to divulge. T. Truth. The presence of truth gives the couple their best chance to rebuild their relationship on a foundation of restored trust. For the husband, the full disclosure is tough. Part of the problem is that there's already so much loneliness. He's walled himself off from others. Hidden sex acts have compromised his life, personal integrity, and relationship with his wife. He's just beginning to face himself and the fear of intimacy rooted in his past. He's afraid. It's what has kept him in denial and out of control for so long. He's been trying to save himself by himself. No amount of prayer, work success, or guilty pleasures have saved him. His soul is suffocating as shame is tightly wrapped around him like cellophane. He doesn't sleep well. He can't breathe in peace. It takes courage for him to bring his secret sex life forward and expose it to someone. He fears rejection, abandonment, and people casting more shame on him for what he's done. For the wife, the full disclosure is her greatest fear. It's the anticipation, the knowledge of good and evil, what she hopes didn't happen, and the foreboding fear of what did come true. No matter what comes to light, something in her dies. The full disclosure ushers in massive amounts of rejection and loss. She starts questioning all the things that have gone on in the relationship. She wonders what is true. Was he texting the other woman I saw him flirting with at our son's soccer game? Does he really love me, or is he just telling me that? Does he love another woman, send her flowers, or tell her so? Has he had sex with someone outside our marriage? Has our kid's safety been compromised? For years, she trusted him, never thinking he'd do something like that to her. Who is he? Her mind races as things are called into question. The intent of the disclosure is to restore honesty to the couple's relationship. This chapter will guide you towards resources as you think about going through a truth-telling process. When can a therapeutic full disclosure happen? The timing of a therapeutic full disclosure is still up for debate. This may be because it's messy and there are so many moving parts. We as betrayed partners are incredibly afraid and in pain. We've been in the dark and have no clear idea about what's been going on. We just want to have someone turn the lights on. Many of us are looking for a timeline, something linear. Even though we'd like the truth now, most of us are open to a reasonable period of time when we can stop holding our breath and exhale. We value the idea of a full disclosure being done well and don't want to have to go through this process again. The problem is, there's another person who's got to be willing to disclose his secrets. What complicates things even further is the denial that often happens around sex addiction. If your husband is blaming, minimizing, or justifying, or he feels entitled to cover up his lies, a full disclosure can be inaccurate and unhelpful. It may only cause more harm than healing. His heart isn't in the right place, so he won't be open or able to embrace how the disclosure impacts you. I know that's not what you want to hear, but it's true. The best case scenarios happen when a husband is grieved about what he's done and wants to repair. He's frightened about bringing his secret sex acts forward, but he's ready to do what it takes to restore the relationship with you. In cases like this, a partner-sensitive full disclosure, which we'll be discussing later in this chapter, could happen within 4 to 6 months from the time the couple starts therapy. While each couple is different, for many, this process takes longer. Husbands are often fighting off their own shame and are defensive about exposing what they've done. Some of them are overwhelmed by the magnitude of their sex acts and struggle to remember. Humility and readiness are necessary components to honesty. The objective is an honest disclosure. It can take from 6 months to a year of hard work. With a sex addiction, partner trauma-trained professional, 12-step recovery group, and sponsor, before the betraying partner is ready to fully disclose. There are some couples intensives that offer full disclosures with or without a polygraph over a 4 to 7 day period of time. Emergency disclosures are offered when there are circumstances, like risk to a wife's health, the affair person is a close coworker or family member, or a child is at risk, that need to be addressed immediately. The goal of a full disclosure is to bring the whole truth about the sexual and emotional betrayals out into the open in the most responsible time period possible. Why would anyone want a full disclosure? You might ask why anyone would want a full disclosure. As a way of teasing out the risks and benefits of disclosure, a research study was done to see how couples felt about the process before and after the event. Sex addicts and their wives were asked two simple questions. 1. Initially, how did you feel at the time about the disclosure? And 2. Looking back now at the disclosure, how do you feel about it now? What they found was striking. For the sex addicts, 58% of them said the therapeutic disclosure was the right course of action before the event, and 96% said they felt it was the right thing to do after. For the wives, 81% said they believed the disclosure was the right thing to do before the event, and 93% of the same women felt it was the right course of action after the disclosure. Both husbands, 96%, and their wives, 93%, felt it was in their best interest to go through a disclosure process. That's surprising and encouraging research. Here are some benefits and risks of a full disclosure. Benefits: restored truth, confrontation of deception, hope for a future relationship. Betraying spouse is able to get free from their secrets and shame. Betrayed spouse is empowered to make informed choices about the future. Risks: increased shame and guilt. Temporary separations or divorce. Financial, legal, or professional consequences. Changes in family functions, including limited access to children. Loss of trust, the relationship may get worse before it gets better. When I'm speaking about disclosures, I often show women a photo of a pill bottle with an Rx warning label listing common symptoms. They include increased watchfulness, panic, difficulty concentrating, anger, irritability, depression, anxiety, sleep disturbances, and difficulty with appetite. Even though the vast majority of husbands and wives felt a therapeutic disclosure was the right thing to do, hearing the truth hurts. It's important that you plan ahead on how to get support for both your heart and your body. Cleaning out the wound. Disclosures, in and of themselves, are often traumatic events. Your husband's sex acts have deeply wounded you. As he works on his full disclosure to bring his private stash of secrets into the light, the process is strangely traumatic for him too. He's bracing himself for what he fears the most, your rejection and abandonment after you know what he's done. In turn, your heartache comes as you sit face to face listening to the ways he's lied and sexually betrayed your trust. Time and time again, I've sat with couples through this raw pain. Each disclosure takes my breath away. Marriage wasn't made for betrayal. The point they're at is so far from their wedding day or the first time they kissed. Marriage and infidelity never mix, not now, not any time in the future. So what are the basic ABCs of infidelity? A. Absence of trust.